Good afternoon, everybody. Hopefully, you can all hear us. And welcome to the Tideway Investor presentation for the half year to September 2022. My name is Matthew Duncan. Presenting with me is Roger Bailey, our Chief Technical Officer, and Camille Kokan, who's our Group Treasurer. And there will be an opportunity to raise questions either via, you know, usual raising hands in the Teams facility, or via the chat facility also on the Teams call, though we would prefer if you could ask those towards the end of the presentation. Equally, you can raise a question through the facility via the investor website as well. Can I just ask that all on the call to put their, to go on mute during the presentation, if that's possible. And lastly, just to inform everybody, there will be an audio copy of the presentation, which will be available afterwards on the investor website. Okay, I'm just going to stop there for a second. Is there, can everyone hear? No complications with. Okay, I'm going to move on. If I now just focus on the presentation, so we are now going to, I'm going to just lead a quick update on the overview, which is page 4 of the presentation. Some of the key highlights for the first half of the year, the project as at September 22 was 83%, and as we stand now, just at the end of December, that is now sitting at a bit over 85%. And it's broadly in line with the business plan. The tunneling has complete, and that was done. That was completed during the early part of this first 6 months of the year. And at September, there were circa 20 kilometres of secondary lining completed. As we stand again, as at the end of December, that's around 21.5 kilometres. All shafts are fully excavated. And shaft secondary lining was sitting at about 83%. And there, as we stand today, we now have 19 out of the 21 shafts completed with secondary lining. The system commissioning is now expected to start in early 2024. Just referring to handover, we have kept the March 2025 date. You'll see there's a bit of an explanation that we have had some complications, and which I will go through in a little bit more detail, and where we have had some delays when we were connecting the Thames Tideway Tunnel to the Lee Tunnel as we completed the actual tunnelling or first phase of that. But I'll explain that a little bit later. In terms of land handback, we have successfully handed back two areas during the period, and that will ramp up as we go through from this point forward. The estimate of completion sits at 4384. And just to remind people, we still are well within the range of 20 to 25 pounds in 14-15 prices in terms of the cost to the customer. Lastly, on this page, just to remind, we've mentioned in the past that there were changes in the license for Tideway. Those changes have now been finalised. One of the key things to note is that the planned system acceptance date has now moved to the 31st of August 2027, primarily reflecting the impact of COVID-19 in the schedule, which was obviously from a couple of years ago. If I now move on to page 5, we are referencing some other parts of the project. In terms of our legacy commitments, we have a target of achieving 85%, and we're now sitting at over 90%. There were no major injuries in the period. We continue to have a strong liquidity position, which we'll go into some detail a little bit later on, and the secured total debt commitment of circa 3.15 billion. There is sufficient liquidity, referencing that, to cover anticipated construction costs all the way through until handover in 2025. Gearing sits at circa 64% as at September 22. Interest cover is in excess of 5 and is well above the covenant. We also published our sustainability report, which effectively combines what was previously our sustainable finance report and the disclosures under the TCFD requirements. In September, DIF Capital Partners, one of our shareholders, completed the process of divesting its 10.66% stake in the Bazalgette group of companies. And we'll go through that a little bit later. And lastly, just to confirm, in terms of credit ratings with both Moody's and Fitch, they have remained unchanged with a stable outlook. I'm now moving on to page 6 and handing over to my colleague, Roger.
Thank you, Matthew, and good afternoon, everybody. On health, safety and wellbeing, obviously we are remain committed to completing our programme with zero fatalities or serious injuries on and off site. As Matthew just said, there were no major injuries in the 6-month period ending 30 September. And that continued obviously through to December at the end of the year as well. And no significant incidents as a result of our marine activities. Our 3-day accident rate improved slightly, and our 7-day rate worsened during the period slightly. And there've been 6 lost time injuries up to the end of September. Since then, in the run up to the end of the year and to the end of the year, those statistics have not materially altered. They're still in that sort of area. Despite some additional challenges, particularly earlier in the year, which Matthew said with some of the delays on the connection between the two projects, our 3-day accident rate has remained below the highs experienced on other large infrastructure projects. We're also very focused on health and well-being because a good well-being in the workforce does translate through to good physical safety as well. And we're supporting the Mates in Mind charitable program, and a number of campaigns have also taken place to support the workforce. For example, a successful hypertension project rolled out over 4 phases with 1,200 blood pressure checks taken. And that was very positive in identifying individuals at risk, and action was taken to support those individuals. We're also looking at the end towards the end of the construction work, and we move from the heavy civils work to more mechanical electrical equipment and also landscaping and architectural landscaping. So we've set up a specific subgroup of our transformational health and safety group in order to look at this and make sure we're ready for the change that's coming in terms of different types of work. Okay, if we move on to the next slide, it's on our vision, legacy, and reputation. So we've continued our proactive engagement with the aid of building positive relationships and a positive project delivery environment. Obviously, sewage pollution continues to be high and growing in the agenda, the public agenda. And Tideway has sought to inform all audiences of how the project will tackle this issue in relation to the River Thames. We've continued to promote awareness and understanding of the project, various communication channels. And in April, we marked the completion of the tunnelling phase, the campaign based on an underground musical performance, which was one of the biggest hits we've ever had in our entire sort of operation of the project. Our legacy programme has got 54 measurable commitments. We're on track with 93% of the live legacy commitments on track against a target of 85. And we're starting to close out these commitments as we reach the end the sort of phases of the project. And as Matthew said, we published a sustainability report linking how we're delivering the project to the UN sustainability goals.
If we move on to page 8 on a regulatory update, the change to the license occurred in October 2022, and it, alongside the change in the planned system acceptance date, the long stop date also changed and was moved from August 2028 to February 2029. In July of 2022, Ofwat published its consultation on ring fencing provisions, and just to confirm, those changes will not apply to Tideway. On the last bullet point there, the Ofwat has commenced its consultation in terms of the draft methodology for PR24, and Tideway has already responded to that consultation, primarily to maintain the focus on ensuring that Thames Water retains the regulatory incentives to align with the requirements for this project. But just to remind everybody, PR24 does not apply to Tideway. If we then move on to Thames Water.
So our interface with Thames Water is critically important. Their commitment to the schedule continues. The focus on agreeing a system commissioning plan, which was submitted last October, and when now that's a document with sort of 83 sub-documents. It's a large document which covers all of the aspects of commissioning. We're now focusing on resolving comments on that plan, ready for a formal acceptance ahead of the preliminary commissioning commencement date early next year. Obviously, Thames Water continues to facilitate access to the sewer network, which is going pretty well. And Tideway and Thames Water continue to implement robust asset protection arrangements to protect the sewer network from our works during construction. We're also our combined property teams jointly identifying land and rights requirements for the long-term lease, which enables Thames Water to finance land acquisition. And as we move closer to starting commissioning in early 2024, we're continuing to collaborate and implement our joint approach to deliver the earliest possible commencement of system commissioning activities, that includes system activation, handover, and then after handover, the system acceptance period and an efficient conclusion of that. So we're working on the detailed planning for system commissioning with Thames Water, and they're really focused on helping us with that, and it's a very collaborative approach. Joint priorities for the coming period are sort of progressing the detailed worksite closeout strategies across the project and finalising the system commissioning plan. And we're going through a number of workshops across Thames Water and the Alliance, including the contractors, to finalise all the details of that now, so that we can get an approval in principle from Thames Water to the system commissioning plan within the next 3 to 6 months.
Okay, if we now move on to page 10, which is the investment programme. As mentioned earlier, as at September 2022, we're 83% complete. In April 2022, we completed tunnelling, as mentioned, and effectively all tunnel boring machines are out of their drives and out of the process. As we stand today, you know, we are circa 21.5 kilometres completed in secondary lining in the tunnels out of the requirement to do about just over sort of 30 kilometres. The project remains on track for completion to hand over in May 2025. That's despite the fact that we have encountered a complication when the final bit of tunnelling met Abbey Mills and will joined without necessarily being operationally with the Lee Tunnel, which is already built on the Thames Water side. There we have found some complications with the connection between the Lee Tunnel and also the Abbey Mill site. And we've been working very closely over the last 3 to 4 months with Thames Water and with the contractor in the east to consider ways to mitigate the delay that's been incurred with that because of particularly a problem with the bulkhead at that point. And we continue to look at opportunities to mitigate that delay, and we will be coming back to you by the time we report at the full year. The key business plan project dates, start of commissioning sits at January 2024. Handover, as mentioned, is March 2025. And the license planned systems acceptance date remains, well, has obviously now been altered to August 2027. The system integration works, is probably worth noting, as we stand at the half year, was circa 71% complete. If I now move on to page 11, total project costs for the period, 6 month period, was circa £418 million. the reported EAC is 4.384 million, and that compares to the regulatory baseline of 3.5 billion. That represents a 96 million increase compared to the last 6 months, reported out 6 months ago. There are two primary reasons for the increase. First is the fundamental impact of inflation and how that flows into outturn costs for the project, although that does not cause a problem with our threshold outturn. And the second element is higher costs that have been incurred by our East Main Works contractor. Some of that to do with the delays that we've impacted in terms of the connection with the tunnel, and also some of the challenges they've had in terms of resources and prelim costs as a result of inflation pressures in their end. We have seen delays incurred at our Abbey Mill site, and there has been quite a significant amount of work dealing with the engineering solution to solve that problem. And I'm pleased to say that the work and the solution for that have been completed. So we have now mitigated those delays. And even though that has theoretically meant that prima facie there is a 12-week challenge that we need to find ways to resolve. I've already mentioned that there is have been a successful handback of two sites, one at both in the west, one at Barn Elms and the second in Dorme Street. I'm going to move on to page 12, which is just to referencing the project schedule. Probably the two key points there today to note there is you'll see in terms of the two diamonds at the bottom right-hand corner of that chart, just to again to emphasize that, you know, we are sitting there at handover at March 2025, and the plan system acceptance date has obviously moved from the previous version to the end of August 2027. Now pass on to Roger.
Okay, if we move to the next slide, just wanted to say really on this slide that generally the vast majority of the heavy civil engineering work is now in the east, involving the secondary lining of the two tunnels in the east, the main tunnel D between Chambers Wharf and Abbey Mills, and the Greenwich Connection Tunnel between Greenwich and Chambers Wharf. Across the rest of the project, this is increasingly finishing off works, mechanical, electrical installation, architecture and landscape, particularly in west, but also now in central. And then over the course of the next period, we'll be seeing removals of cofferdams and the like through the central area in particular, as we get ready for the sort of final phases of construction. So that's the sort of route and sites. In terms of the system integration and sister commissioning, which is the next piece of work. So the several mechanical and controls elements of work that need to be undertaken. The main works contractors are responsible for providing the assets and packages that make up an individual work site and associate testing. They're making good progress in doing factory acceptance tests for the various items such as penstocks, flap valves, isolation gates, covers, and so on. These tests have been witnessed by the project manager, assistant commissioning manager. Site acceptance testing has also begun for mechanical assets installed on site, and this will be increasingly the focus as the main works contractors begin work site testing. The system integrator, which is Amy, covers system-wide control integration, including telemetry, the IT systems, the control room, interfaces and software. They're now 71% complete as of September 2022. System software development is nearing completion, and formal factory acceptance testing of the core software and site equipment has commenced, and enabling installation works are progressing. As I mentioned, the system commissioning plan, this 83 documents that was submitted to Thames Water on schedule on the 14th of October, and they've responded to that they need to under the project documentation process, and we're working through those comments. And we've made a good start on closing out those issues. We are opting a phased commissioning approach, which does provide some resilience to mitigate potential program risks so that there are some critical sites that have to be commissioned in a strict sequence, but many of the other sites have got flexibility, and we built that flexibility into our phased commissioning process. So system commissioning occurs once the pre-system commissioning and worksite testing has been completed, and that commissioning brings the constructed assets into actual operation through various tests and activations. And next slide, we can cover the phases of commissioning that we're working through. So we have a preliminary commissioning in which the bulkhead wall, which is the connection between the Tideway Tunnel and the Lee Tunnel, which is what Matthew mentioned, there were some issues with that that we've now resolved. Anyway, that's the preliminary commissioning, which that wall will be removed to create the London Tideway Tunnel system. Then following that, we have system activation in which sites starting with Abbey Mills are allowed to direct storm flows into the tunnel. And then we have storm testing in two phases, a half tunnel phase, sort of like a restricted phase to ensure that the system is performing as expected. And then we go to full tunnel levels to demonstrate the system can be operated as per the operating techniques and is fit for purpose. And then finally, we have final inspection and maintenance, including a tunnel inspection, before we transfer maintenance from the main works contractors to our maintenance contractor, and then we achieve handover. And so when all these activities have completed and the documentation and records transferred, then the handover criteria will be met and Thames Water will issue a handover certificate. And then following handover, we're into system acceptance, and various tests will be conducted by Thames Water with the support of Tideway to optimize operation and maintenance activities and demonstrate that the system works in a range of different intense storm events over a period of time. When the system has been monitored over a range of these various climatic and operational scenarios, Thames will issue a system acceptance certificate, and that will be the end of the system acceptance period and the end of the formal Tideway project as a project.
Yeah. Thank you, Roger. So moving on to slide 16, on financing activity. So I can say there's been no new financing activity in the period. We remain having a very strong liquidity position, as Matthew mentioned, so well above covenant requirements and our 18-month target. On this page, as Matthew mentioned earlier, our credit rating, there's been no changes to it, and we still have a stable outlook from both Fitch and Moody's. During the last 6 months, we funded $322 million of the delayed drawdown. So that's taken us to the liquidity position you see here of $778 million, and this represents 100% of fully our funding requirements to hand over in 2025. I think other point worth noting on here is we've completed a successful transition from LIBOR to SONIA, and see some familiar names on the call. So thank you for your support with that transition. Moving on to slide 17, the next refinancing is in 2025, which is a very small repayment on the EIB, and after that there's the $250 million bond in 2027. So we are in a strong position to weather the macroeconomic shocks at the moment. So there's no immediate need to go out for new funding, and also there's very little exposure to floating rate debt. So if we are looking, I think it will be, we'll keep an eye on what's happening in the market for opportunities in the next 12 to 18 months. So we'll be monitoring that. Elsewhere on this page, I think the draw attention to the net debt to RCV, so gearing of 64%, which is in line with our plans. We are hedged to inflation, so either 57% of the RCV value or 74% of the overall debt position. This is to hedge against downside in inflation. So that's at 74%. And And finally, on the interest cover ratio, as Matthew mentioned earlier, at 5.3, that's well above the covenant trigger levels and default levels. So a healthy interest cover ratio as well. Moving on to slide 18. Couple of points to mention here. So you may have seen over the summer we published our latest sustainability report, which updates the disclosures on TCFD. Our sustainability linked RCF continues to meet the KPI. So over 90% of the live commitments are being met. And then just worth adding that we have this month, so January 2023, we've submitted the update to S&P. So we're in the process of updating our ESG evaluation, so that we'll be seeing the results of that in the coming months. Hand back over to you, Matthew.
Thank you, Camille. We're now on to page 19. Just to be explicit, the next couple of pages are referencing Basel Jet Tunnel. So if I just give you a quick outline in terms of where we stand in some more detailed financial elements. During the 6 months to September 2022, the group reported a gain of circa £173 million. That's resulting from the fair value movement of the company's derivative financial instruments. The asset under construction as at September 2022 was circa £4.4 billion. If I then break down, which is a movement against the position where we were 12 months ago of circa £840 million. The allowable costs for the six-month period were £233 million, of which £201 million related to direct costs and a further £31.5 million for indirect costs. In terms of the indirect costs, the largest part of that relates to resource costs of circa £22.5 million. It's probably worth noting down the bottom there in terms of excluded costs. Excluded costs for the period up to September 22 were circa £185 million. That compares to the same period last year of circa £81 million. Given the biggest element of that cost is net interest expense, which was circa £183 million, and the obviously these costs have increased substantially compared to 2021 directly as a result of rising inflation indices, which have increased our index linked debt costs. I'm now going to move on to page 20, just referencing cash flow. Net cash flow from operations was circa £23 million for the period, and that's effectively our movement in working capital. If we look at net cash flow from investment activities, use in investment activities, that was circa £332 million. And effectively, that's the gross cash outflow used in constructing the tunnel. Referencing inflows was circa £322 million, and that largely represents the increase in net borrowings during the period. In terms of external debt, our net debt position as at September 22 was circa £2.7 billion, which is approximately £730 million higher than for the same date last year, 2021, September 21. The company's total borrowings are circa £4.085 billion, and that's broadly broken down into £825 million of shareholder loans and circa £3.25 billion of other borrowings. Worth noting that the revolver credit facility remains unchanged at £160 million and has not been drawn at all during the period. A full list of the Tideway external debt facilities are shown a little bit later on page 22. So if I move to page 21, in terms of other financial measures, fair value, I've already mentioned that the we have an element of our borrowing which is hedged by long-term swaps with commercial banks, and these have a movement of fair value. Even though that movement of fair value is recognised in the income statement, It does not actually, and that was a figure of circa 173 million. This was primarily driven by the increase in the SONIA rates, which increased, obviously, as a result of the period, and effectively significantly decreased the present value of the liability on the pay legs. As a result of the disregard election, which has been in place but now for a number of years, means that any gains or losses arising from the movement in the fair value is disregarded for tax purposes. That means that we have no recognisable tax profit, a taxable profit for the period, and thus the resulting corporation tax charge for the period was nil. I'm now moving on to page 22, which I'm happy just to skip. There's some detail there in terms of the borrowings, which we talked about a little bit earlier. If we then move to page 23, as mentioned at the start of the presentation, DIF Capital Partners divested its 10.66% stake in Tideway in September of 2022. That stake was acquired by the company's three other existing shareholders. And you will see on the right-hand side of this page a revised organogram representing the sort of the change ownership structures and how that fits in with the Bazalgette group of companies. Just to confirm the reason for the primary reason for DIF divesting its ownership in Tideway is that it was bound by a close dated fund, and it was a logical point for it to change its ownership in the Bazalgette group. I'm now going to move on to page 24. In terms of financial ratios, we're happy to confirm that in respect of this investor report and or previous ones, that we're compliant in accordance with paragraph 1 of the financial statements, and also Schedule 3 in terms of the CTA. We've already mentioned that in terms of ratio, the gearing ratio sits at 64% as it was at September 22. The interest cover ratio is 5.33 times as at that date, and the average over the period was circa 4.77. So all are within prescribed limits. I'm now going to move to page 25. In terms of significant management and board changes, given obviously the disposal by DIF of its ownership, the Javier Falero, the representative DIF director, resigned out of the Bazalgette Group companies. There were no other significant management or board changes during this period. In terms of acquisitions or disposals, aside from the DIF divestment, there were no changes or no other acquisitions or disposals during the period. And we've already talked about the hedging position. I'm now going to the last page, page 26, and just to formally confirm that there were no default or trigger events occurring during the period. We are fully compliant with our hedging policy. All representations are accurate in all material respects, and in terms of our insurances are fully maintained in accordance with the requirements of our financing documents. That now ends the formal part of the presentation. We will leave, it's now open for any questions that those participating in the call may wish to raise. Please, you can either raise it by hand through the Teams facility, or you can send it through the chat. So we'll keep the line open for a minute or two and just see if there's any questions.
Hi, this is John Cowley from PIC. Thanks for the presentation. I just had a question on the £96 million cost overrun. Can you just give a bit of detail as to how that's split between the kind of specific concerns at the Abbey Mills site versus the kind of general kind of cost inflation coming through?
Yes, John. that 96 million, I mean, I generally sort of paraphrase it and say broadly half of it relates to inflation, just simply that, you know, the movement in costs and because of the way that our contracts work with the contractors, they are protected against any inflation growth. So if I were to give you a little bit more detail, inflation in terms of the automatic entitlement that goes to contractors, that was just slightly above 50 million out of that 96 million. And then the remainder relates to costs for our East contractor. Out of those East, that's the, you know, which is circa sort of 45 million broadly. Not all of that is relating to the impact of the Abbey Mills bulkhead issues. There is an element of that cost which has been included in the half into the first half costs, but there are also a number of costs which related to challenges that they had in terms of prelims and some staff costs and as well as delays that they've had, particularly with leak sealing, which is a problem that they've been having to deal with over the last 6 months or so. So they're the main cost drivers. Given that we have now resolved the Abbey Mills bulkhead issue, and just to explain that in a little bit more detail, the problem that we found when we had completed tunnelling had actually now entered into shaft F and shaft G at Abbey Mills, which is effectively part of the Thames Water site, we found that the bulkhead, which is a Thames Water asset, had moved. So we then had to revise an engineering solution for that to accommodate the fact that there was a perceived risk or potentially a risk of inundation in our section of the tunnel, which clearly would be a risk to the construction teams working. So we then had to find a different solution to shore up and make sure that there was sufficient rigor to protect our workforce. So that was meant a new wall, which we have actually built, which is added to the cost. And some of that cost, though, or not all of it necessarily, has been included in the first half, because some of that work was obviously some of that work has been subsequently completed over the third quarter. So they are the main drivers. And that's the key reason for the 12-week delay. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, great. Thanks for the extra detail there. Appreciate it.
I'm going to give it another 20 seconds. Okay, we've got nothing on the chat. No questions there. Yeah. Well, on that basis, I think we'll call to a close this presentation. Thank you to everybody for making the time to attend our presentation for the half year to September 22. On behalf of the Tideway team, thank you for showing your interest. And obviously, we look forward to meeting with you either individually or over the course of the next presentation when we next have it. Again, just to reiterate, if there are any questions, please do not hesitate to contact any of the Treasury team or use the website, and we will make sure to provide a timely answer back. Thank you again, and look forward to speaking to you soon.